This audio program is brought to you courtesy of Audible.com. Audible, audio that speaks to you wherever you are.
We present John Moffat as Hercule Poirot and Julia McKenzie as Ariadne Oliver in Agatha Christie's Dead Man's Folly.
Poirot.
Monsieur Poirot? Is that you, Monsieur Poirot?
Myself in person, madame.
This is Ariadne Oliver. Can you hear me? It's a terrible line.
I hear you perfectly, madame. You are well, I hope?
I haven't got time for the social niceties. I need you.
You need me?
Yes, I need you here at once.
But what is all this about, madame?
This telephone is in rather an awkward place, people passing through all the time. I'll tell you when you get here. Take the 12 o'clock from Paddington. You can do that nicely.
But it is 11:15.
Lots of time. I'll arrange for someone to pick you up from Nassercombe Station. You have to change at Exeter. And bring you up here to the house. Everyone will be thrilled to hear you're coming.
After a journey of 182 miles on a train that was in urgent need of retirement and a drive through narrow, twisting Devon lanes, I came to Nass House, a big, white Georgian building looking out across a broad river to a distant view of Dartmoor. And there, sitting on the terrace, was Ariadne Oliver, eating an apple.
Mm. I knew you'd come.
Cher madame.
Ah.
I have been asking myself why ever since your telephone call.
Well, I know why. Curiosity.
Mm. Your famous woman's intuition has perhaps for once not led you too far astray. So, tell me, what are you doing here? At this delightful house.
I'm organizing a murder.
A murder?
Oh, not a real one. A murder hunt. You know, rather like a treasure hunt. They offered me such a very substantial fee, I couldn't resist it.
I do not think I have ever encountered such a thing. How does it work?
Well, there has to be a victim, of course, and clues and suspects. Half a crown to enter, and you get shown the first clue. After that, you have to find the victim and the weapon and say who done it. And there are prizes, of course. It's meant to be the star attraction of the Nass House fete.
And it is to assist you in arranging all this that you have sent for me?
Oh, no, I've done all that. Everything's set for tomorrow. All you have to do is to give away the prizes. But that isn't why I asked you to come down. I had quite another reason.
Oh, what reason, madame?
I dare say I'm simply imagining it. But I think there's something wrong.
In what way?
That's what I want you to find out. Ever since I set foot in this place, I felt that I've been jockeyed along, manoeuvred, so to speak. Call me a fool, if you like. But I can only say, if there were to be a real murder tomorrow instead of a fake one, I shouldn't be at all surprised. I know you think I go on about a woman's intuition.
But one calls things by different names. I can easily understand that something or someone has awakened in you a feeling of unease, but can you explain to me what you mean by being jockeyed along?
Well, it's rather difficult. You see, this is my murder, so to speak. I'd planned it all out, like the way I work out the plots of my books. And if you know anything about writers, you realize they can't stand suggestions. Oh, people say, splendid, but wouldn't it be better if so-and-so did so-and-so? Or wouldn't it be better if the murderer were A instead of B?
And that is what has been happening?
Of course, I may be imagining it all. But I don't think I am.
But who has been making these suggestions to you?
To be perfectly honest, I can't really remember. Different people. If it was just one person, I'd be more sure of my ground. Although, perhaps it really is one person working through others, and they're not aware of it.
And have you any idea who this person might be?
No, I haven't really. It might be anybody.
Ah, so the great man has arrived at last.
Oh, yes, he has. Sir George, this is Monsieur Poirot. Sir George Stubbs.
How do you do?
Monsieur.
We're so glad Mrs. Oliver persuaded you to come. Quite a brainwave on her part.
Well, I hope I shall live up to your expectations, Sir George.
Oh, you'll be an enormous attraction. But I mustn't stay here talking. I've got to have a word with Miss Brewis. Trouble about the jam and marmalade store. See you at tea.
I think perhaps we should go off on a little walk around the grounds. Mm-hmm. The moment Sir George spreads the news that you've arrived, we shan't have a moment to ourselves. This way.
And who are the other people who are involved in the fete?
Well, there's Lady Stubbs, of course, Hattie. She's about 20 years younger than Sir George. Grew up in the West Indies or somewhere like that. Beautiful, but, well, sometimes she seems to be positively half-witted. Married him for his money, of course, and doesn't think about anything but clothes. Then there's a chap called Michael Wayman. He's a young architect who's building a tennis court for Sir George and repairing the Folly.
The Folly?
A kind of temple thing with columns. You can just see it over there, through the trees. Uh-huh. It was where the murder was to be committed in my original plan, but apparently it isn't safe. And it was only built a couple of years ago. Put up in too much of a hurry and in the wrong place, Michael Wayman says. And then there's Miss Brewis.
The woman Sir George wanted to consult about the marmalade stall?
He consults her about everything. She's a kind of a general factotum. Very grim and efficient. And then there's a young couple who've taken a little house down by the river. Alec Legg and his wife Sally. He's rather detached and moody and keeps himself to himself. Sally's full of life, very attractive. I think Sir George rather fancies her. And old Mrs. Folliat, of course. Her people used to own Nass House, but they died out or killed in the war or something, and she had to sell the place to Sir George. He's stinking rich, but frightfully stupid outside business. Oh, we turn off here and go down to the river. Oh. I want to show you the boathouse. That's going to be the scene of the crime.
A very sad, neglected-looking place. No one uses it now, I take it.
Well, I don't exactly see Sir George messing about in boats. Still less Lady Stubbs. But it's no common or garden boathouse. It was put up in the 16th century. Sir Walter Raleigh used to sneak off here to smoke his pipe.
And who's the intended victim in your murder game?
Well, she's a girl hiker who is really the Yugoslavian first wife of a young atom scientist. Huh. No, don't look at me like that. It was really quite simple to start with.
And the atom scientist is the murderer?
Actually, she's killed by the country squire.
Oh. And who is going to play the part of the dead body?
I am!
Marlene, where on earth did you spring from?
I just got back from Guides. I wanted to see where the deadly deed was going to be done.
Marlene has kindly taken over the role of the murder victim. Sally Legg was originally going to do it, but Sir George wanted her to dress up as a gypsy and tell fortunes. So Marlene agreed to take her place.
But I'm not going to have any blood on me. Just strangled with a cord, that's all. Are you the famous detective?
I am, mademoiselle.
Seen lots of murders, have you?
Mm-hmm. One or two.
Any sex maniacs? I like reading about sex maniacs.
You would probably not enjoy meeting one.
Oh, I dunno. My granddad saw a body in the woods once. He was scared and ran away, and when he came back, it was gone. It was a woman's body without any clothes on. Do you think it was a sex maniac done it?
We'd better be getting back to the house. Are you sure you'll be all right tomorrow, Marlene? It'll be rather boring for you, stuck in here by yourself all afternoon, until someone finds you.
I shan't be bored. I'm looking forward to being the horrible corpse. Oh, do you think I could have a few comics? And some fashion magazines?
As we approached the gardens of Nass House, we came upon an elderly lady dressed in shabby tweeds, attacking a clump of shrubs with her secateur.
Oh, all this dead wood should have been cut away last autumn.
Mrs. Folliat!
Oh, Mrs. Oliver!
I didn't hear you coming.
This is Monsieur Poirot, Amy Folliat.
Madame.
How do you do? It's so kind of you to come all this way, and so clever of Mrs. Oliver to persuade you to help us out.
Mrs. Oliver is an old friend of mine, and I am delighted to be invited to such a beautiful house.
Our family has lived here since 1598. All the great poets and musicians came here. Spencer, Sidney, Dowland.
It must be hard for you to see strangers in possession of the house now.
So many things are hard, Monsieur Poirot. But let me take you inside so you can meet everybody.
She led us through a daintily furnished sitting room into the big drawing room beyond, which was full of people, all talking at once about the hoopla and the lucky dip and guessing the weight of the pig.
Let me introduce you to Lady Stubbs. Patty, this is Monsieur Poirot, who has come all the way to help us.
How do you do? George has given me this pretty little ring, but then George gives me lots of pretty things. He's so kind.
It is a very pretty ring.
Look at the way it flashes in the light, as if it was winking at me.
Do you know this part of the world, Monsieur Poirot?
Oh, yes, I know Devon very well. I'm very fond of it.
It's quite nice in the daytime, when it doesn't rain, but there aren't any nightclubs.
Oh, do you like nightclubs, Lady Stubbs?
Oh, yes, I adore nightclubs. There is music and you dance. I can wear my nicest clothes and bracelets and rings, and all the other women wear nice clothes and jewels, but not as nice as mine.
I've brought you a cup of tea, Monsieur Poirot.
Oh.
Mrs. Oliver says you take 4 lumps of sugar, is that right?
Quite right.
This is Miss Brewis, Monsieur Poirot, Sir George's secretary.
And general factotum, head cook and bottle washer.
You must have your hands full with the fete tomorrow, mademoiselle.
Yes, indeed. There are always so many last-minute things to see to, and people are always letting one down. Why, only an hour ago,
Amanda,
I was arranging...
Amanda, did you arrange the extra putters for the top golf?
Well, that's all taken care of, Sir George.
Well, could you come and have a word with Benson about the coconut shy? He's getting into a terrible state about it.
I'll see to it straight away, Sir George.
She is very ugly, don't you think?
Have you been very busy preparing for the fete, Lady Stubbs?
No. I think it's all very boring. There are servants and gardeners. Why should they not make the preparations? What's the point of being rich if you have to do things yourself?
Oh, my dear, those were the ideas you were brought up on in your island estates. It isn't like that in England anymore.
What kind of thing will this fete be? Will it be a party like Ascot?
Well, not quite like Ascot, but you must try to enjoy country things, Hattie. You should have helped us this morning instead of staying in bed.
I will be good tomorrow, and I've got a new dress to wear. It arrived this morning. Come upstairs and look at it.
But I'm busy, Hattie.
No, you must see it. Come now.
Where's Amy going?
Your wife is taking her upstairs to show off her new dress.
Yeah, but I need her to sort out this wretched row about the garden produce stall. How people can get so worked up about marrows and runner beans is quite beyond me. And I want to know if the extra fencing has arrived to stop trespassers barging in without paying. Ever since they turned Hoodown House into a youth hostel, they've been the very devil of a nuisance. Seem to think they've some right of way over my land. There was some frightful spotty chap this morning, wearing an awful shirt covered in crawling turtles and things.
Oh, I hope I'm not interrupting, Sir George, but could I borrow Monsieur Poirot for a few minutes?
Of course.
I want to show him all the clues and things for the murder hunt. After all, he is going to be presenting the prizes.
A very singular cast of characters, madame.
Yes, that's just the trouble. I've no idea which of them are really the ones I started with.
And how do they all fit into the murder mystery?
Well, it's like this. Peter Gay is an atom scientist who is suspected of being in the pay of a foreign power and is married to this girl Joan, the squire's daughter. But then this hitchhiker Maya turns up, and she's Peter Gay's Yugoslavian first wife, who everyone thought was dead. And then this uninvited stranger, Esteban Loyola, arrives, looking for Maya, possibly to blackmail. I know it all sounds a terrible muddle, but what can you expect with so many people telling me which way the story ought to go?
And the murder victim is the girl Maya?
Yes, I thought I told you that.
And she is to be played by the girl guide?
Marlene. Well, only Maya's corpse. Mm-hmm. Anyway, anyone who wants to play the game is given a list of all the suspects and possible murder weapons. A pistol, a length of lead piping, a clothesline, and so forth, and a notebook, and the first clue.
That's where you've got to, Monsieur Poirot. I'd better take you up and show you your room. I may not have the opportunity later.
What a magnificent view across the river.
Yes, it is pretty. Your bathroom's on the other side of the landing.
A bookcase, a decanter, a box of biscuits. Everything seems organized to perfection. Am I to thank you or my charming hostess?
Lady Stubbs' time is fully taken up being charming.
A very decorative young woman.
As you say.
But in other respects, she's not perhaps...
Lady Stubbs knows perfectly well what she is doing. Besides being, as you say, a very decorative young woman, she is also a very shrewd one. But I must be getting on. There's so much to do and so little time to do it in.
Why did she choose to make such a strange statement about Lady Stubbs? And to me, a perfect stranger... Was there something about that rather simple-minded young woman I had failed to understand? Beneath my window in the garden, Mrs. Folliot was pottering about with her basket and secateur. Could she perhaps enlighten me about Lady Stubbs?
Hattie is such a dear, good girl. I knew her very well, you see. For a short time, she was under my care.
I did not realize that.
Well, how could you? Her people had vast sugar estates in the West Indies. But there was an earthquake, and the house was burned down. Her parents and her brothers and sisters all lost their lives. There were no near relatives, and it was decided that she should come to Europe and be introduced into English society.
And you were asked to take care of her?
The governor had been a great friend of ours. My husband had died just before the outbreak of war. My elder son was in the Navy and went down with his ship. My younger son joined the commandos and was killed in Italy. This meant there were three lots of death duties to pay.
And so Nass House had to be sold?
Well, I was glad of the distraction of having someone young to look after.
Did she inherit money?
Nothing. There were more debts than assets, I'm afraid, which was probably for the best. She was attractive to men and was easily influenced. And I could only be grateful that a person like Sir George Stubbs should fall in love with her and want to marry her.
Yes, I can see that must have been a very convenient solution.
And since Nass had to be sold, I was very glad that it was Sir George who bought it, and very considerately let me stay on at the lodge. Myrtle, our head gardener, used to live at the lodge, and I've always been fond of the place.
I am very glad, madame, that you have at last found a haven...
Do you know those lines of Spenser? Sleep after toil, port after stormy seas, ease after war, death after life doth greatly please. It's a very wicked world, Monsieur Poirot, and there are some very wicked people in this world.
There was still an hour and a half before dinner, and so I walked out through the front gates and down to the little quay.
Are you wanting the ferry, sir? I can take you over if you wish.
No, thank you. No, I am staying at Nass House, and I thought I would take a little walk.
Up at Nass, are you? I worked there as a boy. Myrtle's the name. I used to look after the boats. Old Squire Folliot would go out sailing in all weathers. And he was overfond of the bottle. I had a pretty hard time with him, his wife did. She lives at the lodge now.
Yes, I have just left her.
Herbia Folliot, too. First cousin from over Tiverton way. She's not had an easy life. Trouble with her husband and with her sons. Particularly the youngest, Mr. James. He caused her a lot of worry, he did. Debts and women it was.
So, now there are no more Folliots at Nass, and you have Sir George Stubbs and his wife.
Never forget the night they first arrived here.
straight after their wedding it was, and the worst gale anyone could remember. Brought the big oak down, it did, and a lot of other trees with it. And what do? Build a heathen temple in its place.
But the folly, do you mean?
Folly it is called, and folly it is. I reckon that wife of his must have talked Sir George into it.
Ah, well, the ladies must have their fancies. But it is sad the day of the Folliot is over.
Don't you believe it, sir? Always be Folliots at Nass.
But the house belongs to Sir George now.
That's as may be, but there's still a Folliot there. Rare and cunning the Folliots are.
Ah, you mean that Mrs. Folliot is living at the lodge?
Just as I say, sir. There'll always be Folliots at Nass.
Dinner that night was rather a perfunctory affair, and no one could talk about anything but the fete. And when it was over, everyone went off to their tasks for the following day.
I'm very sleepy. I'm going to bed.
But Lady Stubbs, there's so much to be done. We were counting on you to help us out.
Yes, I know, but I'm going to bed. You don't mind, do you, George?
You go and get your beauty sleep, Hattie. Be fresh and lovely tomorrow.
But at the breakfast table the following morning, Lady Stubbs, somewhat incongruously wearing a large pale pink hat, seemed uncharacteristically ill at ease.
I've had a letter from Etienne.
Etienne? Who's he?
He's my cousin, and he says he's arriving here today in his yacht.
Your cousin? I never knew you had one.
I hardly remember him. It was all a long time ago. I was a little girl.
Well, we'd better make him welcome. Pity he's coming on the day of the fete, but we'll ask him for dinner. Perhaps we could put him up for a night or two.
Sir George, we really must go and do something about the car park. Mm. Oh, and I do need you to give instructions to Mitchell. He won't listen to me.
Yes, of course.
I'd better be on my way, too. I'm sure I've forgotten one of the clues, but I've no idea which one.
Will you be all right, Hattie?
I have a headache. I shall go up to my room.
Oh, my dear girl, there's nothing wrong, is there?
Oh, no. Don't you worry about me.
I'll look in on you later. So long, Monsieur Poirot.
Au revoir. I am most distressed, madame, that you should be suffering, particularly when your cousin is coming.
I don't want to see Etienne. I don't like him. I'm afraid of him. He does bad things.
I took myself to a quiet corner of the library. But Miss Brewis soon routed me out and carried me off to help her with the clock golf numbers.
No. About a couple of yards further to your left.
As soon as my task had been completed to her satisfaction, I slipped away and, coming round a corner of the house, witnessed a very curious scene.
You're trespassing!
Sir George was leaning out of his wife's bedroom window and shouting at a girl hiker who was wearing a green scarf.
Please, what is it you say?
You can't come through here! Private!
Please, is this the way to Nascombe Quay?
Sir George turned his head back into the room to say something to his wife and then bellowed at the top of his voice,
"This is private property! Go back to the hostel and use the road!"
To the hostel?
Yes! Back to the hostel!
At 2:30, a very minor film star arrived to open the fete. And by 3:00, everything was in full swing and people were queuing up at the gate. Even the young people from the hostel were there, welcome so long as they paid the 1/2-crown entrance fee. I particularly noticed the young man in the turtle shirt whose appearance had so outraged Sir George. Lady Stubbs arrived, wearing a bright cyclamen dress with an enormous black coolie straw hat.
She evidently thinks it's the royal enclosure at Ascot.
Mrs. Folliot, quite transformed in appearance, wearing a hydrangea blue frock and a smart grey hat, appeared to be presiding over the proceedings as if she and not Lady Stubbs were the real hostess.
Pamela, how nice of you and Edward to come.
Such a long way from Tiverton.
There was a display of children's dancing. Cakes were raffled. Goldfish were won. I visited the fortune-telling tent, where Mrs. Legg, swathed in black with a veil across her face and a tinkling charm bracelet dangling from her wrist, told me I would cross the water to meet a mysterious dark beauty. I decided it was time to set off in search of Ariadne Oliver.
When I saw her last, she was in the little camellia garden by the tennis court.
No one seems to have got beyond clue three, when lovely woman stoops to folly.
Perhaps no one knows what a folly is.
Oh, you didn't, so why should they? And they do say the most frightful things.
Who, madame?
The people taking part in the murder game. I heard one of them say he'd like to try and get my autograph. I felt quite pleased for a moment, but then he said he'd heard that I drink like a fish. Most unfair. But what am I going to do? Suppose no one finds my body.
Oh, courage, madame. The afternoon is still young.
That's true. Well, I think we ought to see how Marlene is getting on. I wouldn't put it past her to sneak off and go and have tea. You know what people are like about their tea.
So many paths, and one is never sure where they lead.
We're nearly there.
Well, but what if one of the murder hunters stumbles on the boathouse by accident?
Oh, I thought of that. They wouldn't be able to get in. That's why the last clue is a Yale key. You can't unlock the door of the boathouse without it.
Marlene, we've come to cheer you up. Oh. I must say, you're doing it very well. But you can relax for a few minutes. No one's anywhere near finding the last clue yet. Come on, Marlene. You can stop playing dead now.
Just one moment, madame. So, what you fear has come to pass.
What do you mean?
You told me you would not be at all surprised if there were to be a real murder instead of a fake one.
She's dead?
She is dead. And not long dead.
Why? Who on earth would want to kill Marlene Tucker? Must have been some kind of maniac.
If it was, it is the most extraordinary coincidence.
What do you mean?
She has been strangled with a length of clothesline.
But that was one of the weapons on my list.
Exactly, madame.
But that means...
It means... that this is not the work of some passing stranger who killed on the spur of the moment. Whoever killed Marlene Tucker knew all about your murder game and had planned this death from the very beginning.
It's all my fault. I should never have let them talk me into putting on this horrible game. I knew something would happen. What are we going to do?
We must lock up the boathouse and go and find Sir George. The sooner the police come and take charge, the better.
What am I going to do about this fate caper, Inspector? It seems downright cold-blooded, all this racket going on while that poor child is lying there dead. On the other hand, I don't want to have to give everybody their money back.
Better to leave things as they are for the moment. News will get round fast enough. How many people do you think there are milling about, Sir George?
Oh, a couple of hundred at least, and more of them pouring in every moment. Whole thing's a roaring success. Damned unfortunate.
Couple of hundred... And any one of them could have done it, I suppose.
Well, the whole thing's perfectly fantastic. I mean, who on earth would want to murder a young kid like that?
She was a local girl, I understand.
Yeah, that's right. Her people live in one of the cottages near the quay.
And what was she supposed to be doing in the boathouse, exactly? I gather there was some kind of murder game going on?
Yeah, well, she was supposed to be playing the part of the murder victim. All seemed a good idea at the time, but Well, my secretary, Miss Bruce, she'll be able to explain everything to you much better than I can. So I'll send her in to you, shall I?
Oh, yes, by all means. There are probably quite a few people I shall need to talk to. Lady Stubbs, perhaps?
Well, I have no idea where Hattie is at the moment. She seems to have disappeared completely from view. Somewhere among the crowd, I expect, chatting blissfully away, unaware that anything has gone wrong.
And I should like to talk to the people who discovered the body. I gather one of them is a lady novelist.
Yeah, that's right. Mrs. Ariadne Oliver.
Ariadne Oliver? Oh, I'm a great fan of hers.
Well, she's understandably rather upset at the moment, Inspector. Perhaps you might give her a little time to pull herself together.
A little more cognac, madame?
Yes, please. Just a little. I can't understand it. Who on earth would want to kill a girl like Marlene Tucker? It doesn't make sense.
Murders do not always make sense. But was she perhaps not the intended victim? You said she was supposed to be playing the part of a Yugoslavian hitchhiker.
Yes, the first wife of the atom scientist.
There was a young woman walking through the grounds this morning, dressed almost exactly as you had dressed Marlene Tucker, with a green scarf tied around her head.
She probably came from the hostel.
Sir George was leaning out of his wife's bedroom window.
You're trespassing! You can't come through here! Private! Do you understand? Private!
And when Lady Stubbs's mysterious cousin Etienne de Souza walked up from the river to the fete this afternoon, it was as if your scenario was beginning to take on a life of its own.
You mean the mysterious stranger, Esteban Loyola?
Excuse me. Is this the house of Sir George Stubbs?
Yes, this is Nass House.
I am Etienne de Souza.
Hercule Poirot, at your service.
But what is happening here? It is like a fairground.
It is what is called a garden fete, something of an institution in England at this time of year.
Etienne de Souza, I presume. I'm George Stubbs. Delighted to have you.
It is a great pleasure to meet you, Sir George.
Had you got your letter this morning? She's around here somewhere. You'll dine with us this evening, I hope?
You are very kind.
And can we put you up?
That also is most kind, but I will stay on my yacht. It is moored down the river at Helmos.
Staying long in this part of the world?
2 or 3 days, perhaps longer.
Tell me, madame, was the mysterious stranger your idea?
I don't think it was, but I can't for the life of me remember who suggested it. It's all such a muddle. What happened when this de Souza person met Lady Stubbs?
He did not meet her. Sir George could not find her anywhere.
She must be hiding. She said she was frightened of him. Do you think I could have a tiny drop more?
You know most of the people round here, Constable. What can you tell me?
Well, sir, Lady Stubbs is a bit wanting up here. I expect that's why no one can find her. Scatty, that's what she is.
Is she a local girl?
Oh, no, sir. She's a foreigner. It comes from the West Indies or something like that. I've heard some very queer things about her.
And what do you know about the murdered girl? What are her family like?
Oh, they're nice, respectable people. 2 boys and a girl. None of them's what you might call bright, but Mrs. Tucker keeps the place clean as a pin. Mind you, she nags her poor husband like mad and bullies her poor old father. And I dare say she spoke pretty sharp to Marlene. But she'd take no notice. Like water off a duck's back.
What do you know about Marlene? Was she fond of the boys?
I wouldn't think they'd have had much time for her. Though she'd probably have liked it if they had. But it couldn't have been anyone local who killed her. More likely to have been one of those foreigners from up at the hostel. There's some very nasty ones stay there. Be surprised, you would, at what I've seen them doing in the bushes and woods.
Sir George says you wanted to see me, Inspector.
And you are?
Amanda Brewis. I'm Sir George's secretary.
Ah, yes. That'll be all for the moment, Hoskins. No, just a minute. See if you can find out where Lady Stubbs has got to, will you?
Yes, sir.
Please, sit down, Miss Bruce.
What exactly do you want to know, Inspector?
Oh, it's difficult to know where to start. Tell me how this poor girl came to be taking part in the murder game.
Well, it was rather a last-minute decision. Originally, Sally Legg was going to play the victim.
And who is Sally Legg?
Oh, she and her husband live in Mill Cottage, down by the creek. He's involved in some kind of hush-hush research, and she's a painter. They came to live in the area a month or two ago.
So why didn't she play the part?
Oh, well, there was a party up here one evening, and Sally told all our fortunes, and Sir George said she was so good at it she should dress up as a gypsy and tell fortunes at the fete at half a crown a time. And so we had to find someone else to play the corpse. The local girl guides were helping us with the fete, and somebody suggested that one of them would do just as well.
And who was that somebody, Miss Brewis?
I really don't quite remember, but anyway, it was suggested.
Is there any reason why this particular girl, Marlene Tucker, should have been chosen?
Not that I know of. Her people are tenants on the estate and have been associated with Nass House for many years. That's probably why she was chosen.
And was she happy to do it?
Oh, yes, I think she was quite flattered. She wasn't very intelligent.
So what exactly was it she had to do?
She had to stay in the boathouse, and whenever she heard anyone coming, she had to lie down on the floor, put the cord around her neck, and pretend to be dead.
Wasn't that rather a boring way for her to spend the afternoon, when all her friends would have been having fun at the fete?
I don't think she saw it like that. She was enjoying the idea of being the centre of attention, so to speak. And she had a pile of comics and magazines.
And something to eat as well. I noticed a tray and a glass.
Oh, yes, yes, she had a big plate of sweet cakes and a raspberry fruit drink. Lady Stubbs said the girl ought to have some kind of refreshment and asked me to take them down to her.
Well, you took them to her? When was this?
Oh, about the middle of the afternoon.
Can you be a bit more specific than that, Miss Brewis?
Well, let me see. There was a bit of a delay over the children's fancy dress because Lady Stubbs had wandered off somewhere and Mrs. Folliot had to take her place, so... Well, by the time I actually got round to collecting the drink and the cakes from the kitchen, it must have been about, what, 4:05?
And when did you get to the boathouse?
Oh, at about 4:15.
So, at 4:15, Marlene Tucker was alive and well?
Oh, yes, yes, she was very eager to hear how the murder hunt was going, how many people had entered for it, that sort of thing.
And was she lying on the floor, shamming dead when you came in?
Oh, no, I didn't have a key. I called out to her to say who it was, and she let me in.
And you're quite sure of the time? It was 4:15?
Well, yes, about then. I didn't look at my watch. You mean it was soon after then when she was...
It can't have been very long after, Miss Brewis.
Oh, dear.
Now, did you meet or see anyone in the vicinity of the boathouse on your way there or on the way back?
No, not a soul. Though I think there was someone in the Folly.
The Folly?
It's a kind of white temple arrangement put up by Sir George shortly after he arrived here. It is to the right as you go down to the boathouse. I heard a man laughing and a woman told him to be quiet.
Have you any idea who they were?
No, I haven't. You can't see inside the Folly from the path.
But would you recognise the voices?
Well, there wasn't really enough to go on.
And you're quite sure there was no one else on the path or near it?
I didn't see anyone, but it doesn't mean there was no one there. I mean, it would have been the simplest thing in the world for anyone who might have heard me coming to slip behind the shrubs or the rhododendron bushes.
Is there anything you can tell me about this poor girl that might lead us to our killer?
I'd never spoken to her until she was asked to take part in the murder hunt. I can only think that the fact that she was playing the murder victim must have led some unbalanced mind to turn it into reality.
I really must find out rather more about this murder game. Do you happen to know where Mrs. Oliver is?
She's in the library, I think. Would you like me to get her for you, Inspector?
If you would be so kind, Miss Brewis.
I feel awful. Awful. Because, you see, it's my murder. I did it.
Mrs. Oliver, I don't
Why
quite...
did it have to be the Yugoslavian first wife of the atoms?
I'm sorry, what exactly...
I'm sure that was never my idea. It might just as well have been the second gardener, who wasn't what he seemed, and that wouldn't have mattered half so much, because, after all, men can look after themselves, and if they can't, that's their lookout. Yeah. Men get killed and nobody minds. I mean, nobody except their wives and sweethearts and children, things like that.
Mrs. Oliver, perhaps this
I'm
isn't
not
the
mad,
time.
And I'm not drunk. I'm just upset. thoroughly upset.
I fully understand, Mrs. Oliver, but if we could
The awful thing is that she wanted to be a sex maniac's victim, and now I suppose she was. How do I mean is?
Well, there's no question of a sex maniac. The doctor has confirmed there were no signs of assault or interference of any kind.
Well, thank goodness for that. Though perhaps she would rather have died that way.
Oh, really, Mrs. Oliver,
that's But if he wasn't a sex maniac, why did he murder her, Inspector?
Well, I was rather hoping you might be able to help me there.
I can't help you. I can't imagine who could have done it. At least, I can imagine. I can imagine anything. That's the trouble with me.
How do you mean?
Well, she could have been murdered by someone who likes murdering, but that's too easy. Anyway, how could he have known Marlene was in the boathouse? Or she might have known some secret about somebody's love affair, and or she may have seen someone burying a body at night, or she recognized someone who was trying to conceal his identity, or she may have discovered where some secret treasure was buried during the war, or the man in the launch may have thrown somebody into the river and she saw it from the window of the boathouse. Or she may have got hold of some very important message in secret code and not known what it was. Of course, she may
please,
have...
Please, please, Mrs. Oliver, what did you mean by the man in the launch? Or are you just imagining a man in a launch?
Somebody told me he'd come in a launch. I can't remember now. The one we were talking about at breakfast, I mean.
A man at breakfast who came in a launch?
He didn't come in the launch at breakfast time. It was a yacht. At least, I mean, it was a letter.
A letter?
A letter to Lady Stubbs from a cousin in a yacht. And she was frightened.
What was she frightened of?
Of him, I suppose. She seemed terrified of him and didn't want him to come.
Who is this man?
His name's Esteban... Oh, no, it isn't. That was his name in the murder hunt. He's called Etienne de Souza. Well, you better ask Monsieur Poirot, because he's spoken to him and I haven't.
Just a minute. Did you say Monsieur Poirot?
Yes, Hercule Poirot. He was with me when we found the body.
A little Belgian chap with a very big moustache?
Yes, he's particularly proud of his moustaches.
It's a good many years since I met him. I was a young sergeant at the time. What's he doing down here?
But he was going to give away the prizes for the murder hunt.
And he was with you when you discovered the body? Oh, I'd like to talk to him.
Shall I get him for you? He's in the library.
If you're sure there's nothing more you can add.
No, not at the moment. As I say, I can imagine all kinds of possibilities.
Yeah, thank you very much, madam. If you could ask Monsieur Poirot to have a word with me, I'd be very grateful.
I'll get him now.
Excuse me. Sorry, madam. I'm afraid I've drawn a complete blank over her ladyship, Inspector.
Oh, she must be somewhere.
She'd be pretty difficult to miss. According to her maid, she's wearing a dress of cyclamen, crepe georgette, whatever that is, a large black hat and black court shoes with 4-inch court heels. She kind of got far in those.
Could she have changed her clothes?
No, I went into all that. Her maid says there's nothing missing. Nothing whatsoever. She hasn't even changed her shoes.
Well, even so, it might be worth checking with the man at the gate to see if she went out that way.
I'll do that straight away, sir. Oh, here's the French gentleman for you.
Belgian.
Oh, do please come and sit down, Monsieur Poirot.
Ah, thank you, Inspector.
Oh, I don't suppose you remember me.
But assuredly I do. You are, No. Just give me a little moment. Yes, it is the young Sergeant Bland, whom I met 15 years ago.
Oh, quite right. Oh, what a memory.
Not at all. You remember me? Why should I not remember you?
Murders do seem to follow you about, Monsieur Poirot. I gather from Mrs. Oliver that you came down here to give the prizes for the murder hunt.
She told you nothing else?
Nothing else? She never stopped telling me things. Every possible and a good many other impossible explanations for the girl's murder. What an imagination!
She earns her living by her imagination, mon ami.
She mentioned a man called de Souza. Did she invent that?
Oh, no. There is nothing imaginary about de Souza.
Something about a letter and a man coming up the river in a launch. I could make no head nor tail of it.
Lady Stubbs received a letter at breakfast from a distant cousin she had known in the West Indies as a child, telling her he was coming here today.
Mrs. Oliver said that Lady Stubbs was frightened. Was that your impression?
Yes, it was.
But why should she be afraid of her cousin?
I have no idea. All she told us was that he was bad. She, as you understand, a little simple.
But Do you think her fear was real?
Well, if it was not, she is a very clever actress.
I gather from Mrs. Oliver you met this D'Souza chap. What was your impression of him?
Perfectly charming, and rather bewildered by finding himself in the middle of an English garden fete.
And was Lady Stubbs there when he arrived?
No. She was supposed to be judging the fancy dress competition, but no one could find her.
Perhaps she was trying to avoid meeting her cousin.
It is quite possible.
Well, she can't have gone far. No doubt she'll turn up soon.
And supposing she does not?
You're making it sound quite sinister.
Perhaps it is sinister, Inspector.
From what Lady Stubbs said to you this morning, did you get the impression she was afraid of her cousin's coming because he knew something about her which might come to the ears of her husband? Or would you say it was direct personal fear of the man himself?
I should say it was direct personal fear.
Then I think I'll take a stroll down to where his launch is moored at the quay and have a word with him. Would you care to come with me, Monsieur Poirot? I'd be grateful for your opinion.
Welcome aboard, gentlemen. I'm afraid we shall be a little cramped here. You would not prefer to go down to my yacht in Helmholtz?
Well, this will do perfectly well, sir.
Life is full of surprises. I come all the way to Devon to spend an afternoon with a little cousin I have not seen for years, and what happens? I find myself in the middle of a kind of carnival with coconuts whizzing past my head and little girls dancing about in fancy dress. And then, without warning, I am embroiled in a murder mystery. Not that it concerns me in the least. I am at a loss to understand why you should wish to interview me.
You arrived here a stranger, Mr. D'Souza.
And strangers are necessarily viewed with suspicion. Is that what you mean?
No, that is not what I meant at all. You came up the river from Helmholtz this afternoon, I understand.
That is so, yes.
Did you happen to notice, on your right, an old boathouse jutting out into the river with a little mooring quay by the side of it?
Yes, I remember passing it. If I had known the boathouse belonged to Nass, I would have moored the launch there and not carried on to the quay.
Did you see anyone there as you passed?
No. Should I have seen someone?
It's a possibility. You see, Mr. D'Souza, the murdered girl was killed in that boathouse this afternoon.
And you think I might possibly have been a witness to the murder?
I just wondered whether you might have seen the girl. She might have looked out of the window or come outside. If you had, it might have helped us to narrow down the time of her death.
I see what you mean, but why ask me particularly? I noticed plenty of boats going up and down the river from Helmholtz, pleasure steamers, that kind of thing. Why not ask them?
Well, we shall ask them in due course, Mr. D'Souza. Never fear. Do I take it then that you did not notice anyone at the boathouse?
No. There was nothing to show there was anyone there. And if the girl had been looking through the window, I would probably not have noticed her, since I did not pass very near. I am sorry that I cannot help you.
Oh, well, we can't hope for too much. Are you alone down here on this cruise, or do you have friends with you?
Until recently, there were a number of friends with me, but for the past few days, I have been on my own, apart from the crew, of course.
And may I ask, what is the name of this yacht of yours, Mr. D'Souza?
The Esperanza.
Oh, thank you. Now, I understand Lady Stubbs is your cousin.
A distant one. In the islands, you must understand, there is a great deal of intermarrying. We are all cousins, so to speak. Hattie is a second or third cousin. I have not seen her since she was a young girl of 14 or 15.
And you decided you would pay her a surprise visit today?
It was hardly a surprise visit. I had written telling Hattie I was coming.
Yes. Yeah, I understand she received a letter this morning, and she was surprised to hear you were in the country.
Well, that would have been my second letter. I wrote to her more than a month ago when I was in France, telling her I would arrive at Torquay or Helmholtz round about today.
May I ask a question, Inspector?
Oh, of course. Please, go ahead, Mr. Poirot.
Did Lady Stubbs reply to your first letter?
No, I don't think she did. But I was travelling and had no fixed address.
And besides, I do not think my cousin Hattie is very good at writing letters. She is not very intelligent, you know. Although I understand she has grown into a very beautiful woman.
So you have not yet seen her?
She seems to be unaccountably missing. No doubt this Espèce de Gala bores her.
Have you any reason to believe your cousin might be trying to avoid you?
What a fantastic question. Why should Hattie wish to avoid me? The idea is absurd.
There is no possibility that she might have cause to be afraid of you?
Afraid of me? Forgive me, Monsieur Poirot, but the idea is quite fantastic.
Your relations with your cousin have always been quite amicable?
I have had no relations with her for years. I have not set eyes on her since she was a child of 14.
So what made you decide to come and see her, Mr. de Souza?
I read a paragraph about her in one of your society papers. It mentioned her maiden name and that she had married this rich Englishman, and I thought, I must see what little cousin Hattie has turned into. No more than that. And now, since it appears she does not wish to see me today, I would like to go back to my yacht. I am sure you cannot wish to ask any more questions, Inspector.
You're not thinking of leaving Helmuth for a day or two, I hope, Mr. de Souza?
How charmingly you put it, Inspector. Is that an order?
Oh, just a request, sir.
I appreciate your politeness. I propose to stay at Helmuth for 2 more days. Sir George has kindly offered to put me up at Nass House, but I prefer to remain on the Esperanza. If you should want to ask me any further questions, that is where you will find me. I can only wish you every possible success in tracking down your murderer, gentlemen.
Very superior kind of character. I don't care to be condescended to. Surely he must appreciate the seriousness of the situation.
Even so, I can see no reason why he should be involved in the death of Marlene Tucker.
Perhaps not, but a little cooperation would surely not be too much to ask.
Oh, I've been looking for you everywhere, Inspector. Sir George wants to see you. He's in a terrible state. He's only just realised that Lady Stubbs can't be found anywhere. I told him she'd probably gone off somewhere with some friends, but he's got it into his head that something's happened to her. It's ridiculous.
Well, not that ridiculous, surely. We've had one murder here this afternoon.
Oh, but Lady Stubbs is perfectly capable of looking after herself.
Are you really sure of that, Miss Brewis?
I've been given to understand she's rather a helpless kind of character.
Oh, nonsense. It suits Lady Stubbs to play the helpless invalid when she wants to get out of doing something. It takes Sir George in, I dare say, but it doesn't take me in. But we'd better go and find him. I've never known him to be like this before.
You've got to do something about Hattie, Inspector. You've got to find her. Some ruddy homicidal maniacs roaming around the fete, killing people.
Oh, I think that's rather an alarmist.
Alarmist? My wife has been missing for nearly 2 hours. Why didn't somebody tell me? I mean, I thought it was a bit odd when she didn't turn up for the children's fancy dress. But no one told me she'd vanished off the face of the earth.
Well, nobody knew.
Well, somebody ought to have known. Why didn't you notice, Amanda? You were keeping an eye on things.
I can't be everywhere. I've got so much to do. And if Lady Stubbs chooses to
wander
off...
Why should she choose to do that, Unless she wanted to avoid that Dago fellow.
Forgive me for interrupting, Sir George.
Interrupt by all means, Monsieur Poirot.
Did Lady Stubbs receive a letter from Mr. de Souza about 3 weeks ago, informing her that he was coming to this country?
No, of course she didn't.
You're sure of that, Sir George?
Quite certain. Hattie would have told me. Well, you saw how upset she was when the letter arrived this morning, Monsieur Poirot. It gave her a splitting headache, and she had to go and lie down.
Did she say anything more about de Souza? Did she tell you why she did not want him to come?
No, she didn't give any reason. She just kept on saying he was wicked.
Wicked? In what way?
Blessed if I know. She just went on rather like a child, saying she wished he wasn't coming here. She said he'd done bad things.
What kind of bad things? And when?
Oh, long ago. I imagine de Souza is the black sheep of the family. And Hattie must have picked up odds and ends about him when she was a kid. She's got a kind of horror of him. I mean, she can be very childlike sometimes.
She didn't say anything more specific.
I wouldn't want you to go by what she said, Inspector.
Then she did say something.
All right, I'll let you have it. What she said was, and she said it several times... He kills people. He kills people.